December 1st. That's a real Black Monday if you have to submit a college application by today. December 1st is the soft deadline for applying to most American colleges and universities if you're planning to start your freshman year in the fall of 2015. And it's been a long couple of months if you've been in the process of selecting colleges, thinking about what your future might be, and trying to take advantage of programs that might emphasize and encourage students just like you. And if you're a student who comes from a background that maybe isn't necessarily on a college track all the time, perhaps you're someone who's going to college for the first time in your own family from an urban background and from a traditional diversity population, the fact that affirmative action is a much more difficult admissions policy means that once you get on campus, you may need some help in actually dealing with the culture shock of making it to college if you intend or actually do make it to college. Most universities tout their diversity along with their campus facilities, but race and class gaps remain, and who gets to college and who gets to graduate is a function not only of statistics on paper, but it's also how well you do when you're on campus. Joining us is Jacques Steinberg, Senior Vice President at Say Yes to Education and author of The Gatekeepers, Inside the Admissions Process of a Premier College. Also with us is Debbie Beal, President and Founder of the Posse Foundation. Welcome to you both.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Debbie Beal, based on your experience with the Posse Foundation, do parents and even students get the potential for culture shock in the first year of college at whatever level they may be at?
I think no kid really sees what's ahead of her before she gets to campus, before he gets to campus. It's a culture shock for any student. And you're right, it's a culture shock for parents too, because life changes dramatically.
And the narrative that we've grown to accept is that the story ends once you're accepted, and that's, for you, not the case at all.
Right. Well, for Posse, which started because of a kid who had dropped out of college, the culture shock was so extreme, you know, he said, I never would have dropped out if I had my Posse with me. That kind of allowed us to see that if you could send a student with a group to college, he would have a built-in support system. And so that's what we do. We make sure that students have wraparound supports, not just on their way to college as they transition from high school to college, but all the way through college.
So Posse candidates typically satisfy what sort of criteria? What's an ideal Posse candidate, and how does that work on campus?
What's interesting about Posse is we're a college success and leadership program. So we're looking for young people who are very dynamic, very motivated, very ambitious. And so our kids are coming from big urban public school systems. They're generally very, very diverse groups of students. We end up with probably 80% who are Black and Latino. And, you know, most of the students are not coming from wealthy backgrounds. But that's because we're recruiting from these very diverse urban public school systems.
And you want them to succeed in what kinds of schools who've become your partners?
We have 51 partner colleges and universities, all very selective institutions, schools like Bryn Mawr and Brandeis and University of Wisconsin-Madison and Cornell, really wonderful schools.
Jacques, does the fact that you would need this kind of support group for this demographic of students suggest that there's a flaw in the education system, that in fact education is serving a narrower and narrower demographic?
Well, it's certainly the work that Posse is doing is extraordinary in terms of sort of identifying that need and correcting for it. The organization I work for, Say Yes to Education, is coming at it in a way that's both similar and different. We're trying to offer the same wraparound supports that Debbie is suggesting, but beginning as early as kindergarten in entire cities, the entire city of Syracuse, the entire city of Buffalo, with the goal that every student who graduates from the public high school will have access to a full tuition scholarship, either to an in-state public or to one of our 70 private college partners, but also that they will have had the supports to be ready to take advantage of that opportunity.
Does this service supplant, come as an addition, a supplement to what parents are doing, not doing, supposed to do? How do you view that?
It's absolutely sort of all of the above. I mean, making sure that for families that either don't have access to that support and need it, that it is available. And in our case, we're working with all local officials, public school system, philanthropic organizations, local business, to literally bring an entire community together to provide these sorts of services. But I think it's important for families listening to the broadcast to know that if you're not fortunate enough to be in a program like Posse or have access to a Say Yes City, that you can really sort of make your own luck at some of the institutions that are partners of both our organizations. For example, Georgetown and Washington University in St. Louis, two partners of ours, have outstanding wraparound support so that once you land on campus, there are tremendous resources to sort of fill in some of the things that middle and upper middle class families take for granted.
Is it your experience that parents who would decide to emulate your program and basically start in the elementary years and go high admissions office at Georgetown or, Florida State, I think my kid is talented, anything I should be doing now, I'd love to let you know about their progress, something like that. Is that parent considered a nut, or is that parent trying something that works for you in these community-wide models?
Well, it's important to know that in our case, we're starting working with kids in the elementary grades, but we're certainly not, teaching them how to spell Harvard and Yale.
Right.
But I do think that it's important to know in the middle school years if you really, as an applicant or as a family, have identified one of these highly selective institutions as a goal. Knowing in 7th and 8th grade that you need to take some really tough courses in high school is really important information, and making sure that you're ready for those courses. Finding out that information in the 11th grade is a little late.
Is there a way, Debbie, to take the pressure off of getting into these absolute top-level schools? It seems that finances are very challenging right now, and the proliferation of college professors in the post-war period in the United States means there are a lot of great schools out there, even though they don't get this top-level reputation. How do you encourage kids, even talented kids, who think they're, Harvard material, to understand that they're going to find a great education at a lot of places that they wouldn't normally think of?
Oh, I could not agree with you more. There are so many outstanding institutions of higher education. We've got 1,400 about four-year institutions in the United States. And when you're talking about the schools everybody thinks are the best, that's a very, very small percentage of those schools. There are so many more that are wonderful institutions. And I know now there's a trend, Jacques, right, to apply to 20 or 30 institutions. Kids don't need to do that. Pick 7, pick 8. And apply to those schools and really be thoughtful about schools that match your interests. And remember, there's a lot of financial aid out there for kids. I think young people, especially young people who come from low-income backgrounds, don't realize how much aid there is for them.
And go ahead, John.
Two notions that sort of take the pressure off. One is that you take the 1,400 four-year institutions that Debbie mentions, only about four dozen or so reject far more than they accept. So the lion's share of institutions in this country accept the majority of applicants. But sometimes, we as parents and students think that the whole world has admission rates like the Ivies, and that's not true. Another notion that takes the pressure off is the idea that over 700 colleges in this country do not require the SAT or the ACT for at least some applicants. So they don't require standardized tests. And you can find that list of schools at fairtest.org, FAIRTEST.org. And for those who don't want to go down that standardized test path, there is sort of an alternate way.
You mentioned financial aid, but last question before we go, should all college students, prospective college students, read a book called Living with Debt in Your 20s at this day and age, Jacques?
They certainly should be familiar with that concept, and they all should fill out, all their families should fill out the FAFSA and the CSS student profile to make sure that if they're eligible for aid that they do get it.
And for any student who's thinking maybe I shouldn't apply to college, they should think twice. College is critically important for our lives, for our careers, if they're going to compete in a very competitive workforce. We need to go to college.
Debbie Beal is president and founder of the Posse Foundation. Jacques Steinberg is senior vice president at Say Yes to Education and author of The Gatekeepers Inside the Admissions Process of a Premier College. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.